You are the master of your reality. This is even more true in relation to the government. Democracy doesn't just happen. It takes participation. Governments need participation and feedback from their citizens. Join Rob Hutchinson for Dear Parliament, where you get to understand the issues and engage directly with government. Dear Parliament is every Wednesday at midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to yet another edition of Dear Parliament. It's been a rather interesting week, as it always is in South Africa, with a lot of things going on, both locally and on the international front. And I think this week is going to be even more interesting, the next week especially as well, as we start discussions on the budget speech and the budget proposals and everything else that has come to do with that. And of course, along with the budget comes interest rate problems. Do we see a cut in interest rate? Cut then will bring it down, or do we see an increase in the interest rate, or does it stay as it is? Of course, this is all influences inflation. Inflation can cause a major problem in South Africa, although it's been pretty good. Inflation is well within the acceptable range, and the projections were between 3% and 6%. But however, inflation is actually well below the 4.5% target that was set in the previous quarter. So will there be an interest rate cut? The talks are happening tomorrow with the decision-making body. And some people say it'll be the same. Some people are predicting a 0.25 and a 0.5% cut in interest rates, which will be great for South Africans and will probably boost the markets in several positions, especially the property market. The property market will see a great increase in sales and making it easier for people to get loans and so on various items. But again, that does carry its risks. It might see it might push inflation up as well. So we'll find out tomorrow. So if you're interested, then take a listen and keep an eye on the news. And let's find out if we do see a cut in the interest rate, or if they keep it the same. And they might keep it the same due to instability on the international markets, the ongoing so-called Trump trade wars, which are driving inflation around the globe and creating a bit of uncertainty in South Africa as well. Also, there are concerns around the government of national unity on the indecisions surrounding VAT and other taxes. Will this create a problem? Will they hold the interest rates as they are due to uncertainty there? But we don't know. There's last time they cut the rates. A few of the members voted against cutting rates. So that does already show that there is a bit of trepidation there. Will they keep it together? Will they decrease it? Well, I'm hoping they will decrease it. Definitely will. And it's probably because the rand has been pretty stable lately, which is quite strange for South Africans. We're so used to checking the rand and seeing how volatile it is, jumping all over the place. But lately, it's been quite stable, probably due to the weakening dollar, or the story around the weakening dollar. But it's been stable around 18 rand 20 to the dollar, which is not too bad, nowhere near where it should be. I think our guest today might have a few words to say about where the rand should be and so on. And of course, we're speaking to Kieran Ryan later. Kieran Ryan is now becoming a regular guest on the show. Great chats with him all the time, which I'm sure listeners will be interested in. Always to do around financial matters, municipal matters, and any kind of policy-related issues that do affect you and I. Great chatting to Kieran. If you missed any shows previously, you're welcome to have a look on our website at www.chaifm.com and catch up with any previous shows there. More going on this week. There was a report on how load shedding has affected the economy, how much South Africa's economy has lost. Not too bad. When I say not too bad, if you're counting in billions, it's only 481 billion rand in 2024. Billions, we can't even understand how much a billion is. Billion is 1,000 million. But let that sink in. It's an incredible amount of money. But anyway, it's less than the previous year in 2023. 2023, load shedding took about 2.9 trillion from the economy, which is too many zeros for me to even comprehend there. But yeah, let's hope that's getting better. There does seem to be more stability in the grid throughout the year, this year so far. However, there does seem to be an increase in load shedding, and load shedding does seem to be coming back. Let's just hope that it stabilizes and we don't see a return back to 2023. I saw an interesting news article today and some notifications that came through around the go slow at SAA, South African Airways, our previously embattled national carrier, which it still does seem to be battling there. I mean, a go slow is nothing new at SAA. It's been on a go slow for a few decades, I think. But no laughing there, but it has been. It definitely has been on a go slow, if not moving backwards rather than even going slow. But this time it's around wage negotiations with staff and pilots. And yeah, we can see where this is heading. We're that this far deep in this kind of mess already. I don't see much future for our SAA. It really is. It's quite laughable. Just close the door on it, get rid of it, and focus on privatizing it completely. That's the way it should be. Yeah, other news on the budget. There's still a stalemate on that budget, which we'll be chatting with Kieran about later. Some interesting news that I found out, Kieran, maybe you can jump in here. I found out that the minister can raise VAT before Parliament actually debates or passes the Parliament, passes the legislation. So the minister doesn't have to wait for a vote on the entire budget. He can still raise VAT as he sees fit. However, that would undermine any public participation that does happen, because as we know, once the budget is passed, the various bills go out for public comment and through debate in Parliament, and then it's only voted in May. However, the minister can raise it now, which is quite concerning.
Yeah, and in fact, hi, Rob. It's good to talk to you again. that's an interesting point. What is the legal position of raising VAT? And it does appear that the Minister of Finance, Enoch Godongwana, did this on his own. As they would say in the legal profession, he was off on a frolic of his own, with huge protest coming from the various different opposition parties. This is a crisis, the kind of which we haven't seen for a very, very long time. You are right that this then has to go to a vote. There are all sorts of potentially interesting consequences that come from this. If the GNU, the Government of National Unity, cannot get an agreement on this, the government can then apply the quotas, the spending quotas from last year's budget for a period of 4 months.
Yes.
This is in terms of the Appropriations Act.
So in other words, they keep running the existing budget for another 4 months.
Exactly right. But then, you know, the clock is winding down. And if there is no agreement by that point, well, all sorts of potential measures can come into play. One would be the government just invokes emergency measures, which I'm sure they don't want to do, but they might. And then there could be a constitutional court challenge, which would be very interesting. This has never happened when it comes to budget time or as a response to any budget in the past. So we're heading into unfamiliar territory here and how this is going to play out. But, you know, a VAT increase from 15 to 15.5, with another 0.5% coming next year. You know, the I think this government is just looking at VAT as and they're eyeballing what is happening in Sweden and Europe and places like that where you have 27% VAT. Well, yeah. We're not Sweden. Yeah. We're not the UK. We're not Germany. We cannot afford, and I would say we cannot afford this government anymore. If you look at what they've allocated to themselves, a 5.4% increase in spending. Yeah. Just imagine that you as an employee in a company and you run out of money and you go to your boss and you say, oh, by the way, you're going to have to pay me an extra 10% because I cannot cover my bills. and I'm not, you know, I'm not going to cut back on any of my spending, but you just got to pay and you got no choice. Yeah. That's the position that we're in here. We're way past peak tax with this government and it's becoming unaffordable the way we're going.
No, it absolutely is. Yeah. I'm in two minds about it, Kieran. I must be honest, because I look at countries in Europe and I think, you know, VAT increase actually works because everybody pays VAT, whether it's your local criminal or your local drug dealer. When they buy something, they're paying VAT. And to me, that's the way to go. You want to increase it even by 2-4%. I say go for it. However, does definitely need a corresponding drop in income taxes for those. I'm all for eliminating income taxes completely and pushing VAT up to 22%. Go for it. But it has to, you have to drop income taxes, especially PAYE and so on. And I reckon it would balance out. Of course, you still have your basket of VAT-free items that cater for the unemployed and so on, and you still have the benefits that are associated to that. However, to me, there's a lot of people who don't pay tax in this country who should be paying tax, and they dodge it through various criminal means, and that number is estimated to be quite substantial. I'm sure it includes some ministers as well, but we never know with undeclared revenue streams and so on. You know, of Palapala comes to mind there. So that does.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
Rob Hutchinson and today with Kieran Ryan. Kieran, we're talking about, can we afford this government? Can we really?
No, we can't. Just on your point there about VAT, yes, it is the most efficient tax. Bear in mind that we have over 100 different taxes in South Africa. I would love to see, I don't think it's going to happen, but I would love to see a complete overhaul of the tax system. Mm-hmm. And you are right to say that a VAT increase would be justifiable if there was a decrease in personal income tax and corporate tax and all of the other taxes. However, this is a government that, I was listening to Davy Ruth the other day, and he was talking about who is actually providing any oversight to this government in terms of its spending. Somebody's got to say no. Somebody in the government has got to say no, you cannot spend anymore. And that should probably be National Treasury. If you give this government more money, they will spend it, and then they will spend more than you've given them, which they'll have to borrow. And that's how we end up with a deficit of 4.6%. We're borrowing in excess of what we can actually recover in taxes.
Yeah, so actually, sorry to interrupt there. I actually saw a statistic. It's actually can't remember the actual figures, but it's about 13,000 rand per second that the debt repayments cost South Africans. 13,000 rand a second. That is incredible.
Well, it depending on how you calculate it, it's about 18% of all expenditure is now going to debt, just on the interest.
Wow, just on the interest phase.
But if you add in, there's some undisclosed debt in there, the guarantees, such as guarantees that have been given to Transnet, which allows them to borrow, that's another 800 billion. So in other words, of every rand in tax that you're paying, about 22 cents of that rand is going to pay back the debt, the interest on that debt. It's second only to education now, and it's probably in the next year or two going to overtake education as our biggest expense. It's unsustainable. Oh. Another measure that is used is debt to GDP. Well, it's currently at about 74-75%. the government reckons it's going to stabilize at 76%. But these are all promises, and I don't think they're going to be able to keep them. There's no appetite, there's no creativity in this budget for cutting back on spending. And there are a number of ways that they could do that, and they haven't done it.
Yeah, no, there definitely are a number of ways. But it's, I think government's caught between a rock and a hard place, yeah, because our infrastructure is failing. It's dire straits for electricity, water, and major public services here, which require huge amounts of spending. We've seen deterioration in roads all over the country, but it's far far reaching than that. There's a lot of hidden expenses that the general public doesn't get to see, but they are expenses nonetheless. So where could they exactly cut back?
Well, I would start with the cabinet. It's, I believe, if not the biggest, one of the biggest in the world with, is it 37 ministries that we have, 36, 37 ministries? Cut that in half. Do we need deputy ministers as well?
Yeah.
Because they all come with expenses. You know, they've got bodyguards, they've got houses, they've got travel. They live in Pretoria. They fly down every week down to Cape Town. They fly overseas for conferences. That's a huge expense. That could be cut very quickly. Mm. The DA came out with a suggestion that you could save about $60 billion if they were to have a contribution holiday for public servants into their pension funds. That's not going to diminish the benefits that they receive at all. It's just a contribution holiday, a pause, basically. On any further contributions. So that could be done. Look at what is happening with SASA, and this is an area that really has to be looked at, and I think Elon Musk in the US has proven this to be true. When it comes to welfare, and I think we spoke maybe a week or two ago about these Stellenbosch students who found a loophole in the SASA, that's the South African Social Security Agency, where people register for these benefits. And how many thousands or perhaps millions of these are ghosts? They just don't really exist. It's a fraud.
Absolutely.
You got the Public Rail Agency of South Africa. Well, they found out that 10% of their employees are ghosts. Now, when you go through the public sector like that, and the public sector, remember, has got 1.3 million employees, so we're told, I bet you're just going to shave off billions and billions if you go at it with the kind of energy and aggression that is required to peel back this expenditure.
That's it. And I think the ghost employees is a major issue. We've seen that through all state-owned entities. I think they uncovered so many in Eskom alone. It was absolutely ridiculous. And ghost employees, I don't understand how they can't pick them up, first of all, because somebody has to pay the salaries, and who's checking that those people actually exist? But I suppose it's a catch-22 when you have so many levels of administration and so many levels of governance within a state-owned entity. If I'm a division manager and I was a bit unscrupulous, I'll just say I have 30 staff, but I actually only have 10. The other 20 go into all different bank accounts, maybe some of them my bank account or my family's bank accounts and so on. And there's employment contracts there for them. They're paying PAYE, so they're registered. And separate bank accounts, it's extremely difficult to pick it up if you look at it from that point of view. But that would be systemic corruption involved there, where every level of management is corrupt. And that's what I was proving to be the major problem at Eskom. One level covers for the next, and so on. It's incredibly difficult to do it. But in small institutions, then it should be easy enough.
Yeah. I mean, what are these CETAs doing as well? I think there's about $80 billion that can be saved there. Anne Bernstein from the Center for Development Enterprise, she points that out. And I think that's a very good point. I'm still waiting to see what is the real benefit of these CETAs. On the point about ghost employees, I think that accelerated during COVID when people were allowed to work at home. And there was no real tracking of what they were up to. And I think people started moonlighting and taking on other jobs. And you know, so the public sector thing is just a sideline gig for them. Yeah. So they're running two salaries there. I think that's one thing that could be looked at there.
Yeah.
But the more systemic issue is just that, is when the HR department is actually involved in this and creating lists of ghost employees. So you could have a sort of criminal cartel within these organizations. There's like, yeah, we're in on this together. We know exactly what we're doing. You know, we're going to add, you know, another 100 employees, and we're going to collect their salaries and divvy it up at the end of the month, something like that. And I bet you will find that.
But there's so many factors around it as well. It could be, you mentioned COVID. It could be that. It could even be black economic empowerment, being forced to meet race quotas, and just hiring people that aren't even qualified, or pretending to hire other people, and then nobody actually checks it out or investigates whether these people are real. I mean, BEE costs South Africa a huge amount of money.
I think it's $150 billion a year. That's research by the Institute of Race Relations. Mm. And that's because that's just in the public sector, by the way. That's where you have a public sector tender that goes out, and you are allowed to inflate the price you pay anything up to 25%, depending on the size of the transaction. Now, that's a tax. Wow. That's a hidden tax.
Just explain that slowly again. So if it's a BEE contractor that you're employing, they're allowed to add 25% on.
Yes, depending on the size of the contract, it's about 12% for smaller amounts. But by smaller amounts, it would be less than 50 million.
Yeah.
Sorry, I may have that wrong. it may be for the bigger amounts that you have 12%. For the smaller amounts, you have 25%. Either way, that is a massive amount of transfer of wealth from the productive to the unproductive sector. And just to give you an example of how that works, because De Reiter, when he was running Eskom, he said it was costing us 2.5 times to build 1 kilometer of transmission grid. You know, those cables that transmit the electricity, than Namibia was paying. That's a substantial cost that Eskom cannot avoid,
and that was simply from BEE deals,
just localization deals. Call it that. I mean, a lot of countries now have these localization requirements, but I don't think any are quite as severe as they are in South Africa. Are they corrupt? I think, you know, whenever you have an allowance like that, it just opens the door to corruption on a massive scale.
Definitely. Well, there's an avenue to look again for reducing spending. Makes perfect sense then. If you have to increase by this amount because legislation says so, then let's get rid of that legislation that says so, and immediately we cut down on government spending by a significant amount, between 12 and 25%.
Yeah. I mean, I think we are getting, there's more discussion around this now. I think we are getting to the point where we're going to have to look at that. You know, this is a sacred cow. This is almost religious in its zealotry, the whole BE thing in South Africa. But the cost of it is beginning to be discussed. And there will come a point where it'll have to be reformed. And a lot of black entrepreneurs are saying this as well, it's time for companies to compete on an equal footing in South Africa. We'll end up like Malaysia, you know, where they had this empowerment scheme for the indigenous people that went on for 50, 60 years. And it's just hugely costly to the country. But Malaysia runs a lot better than South Africa, I can tell you that.
Yeah, it definitely does. Yeah, but maybe they have a more strict government that takes control of the corruption that goes on within the government structures.
Well, my brother lives there, and I was talking to him about this, and he, it's corrupt everywhere because it's a system of graft and invites corruption, where you have one group of people who are entitled to these kind of benefits, these financial benefits. It's just one part of the puzzle that we've built here. You know, I look at South Africa It's rather like this rickety old Ford Corolla that you bought back in the 1980s. It's held together with wires. It's still going on the road. But, you know, every year we're just having to add more wire and more bubble gum to hold the thing together. Yeah. And I think it's getting to the point where this thing is going to fall off.
Definitely. That's a great analogy. I can just actually picture it right now. The wheels are held on by one wheel nut each, and they're wobbly, and it doesn't pass its roadworthy test whatsoever.
Right.
Which is much like our state-owned entities. Yeah. I don't think any of them pass their roadworthy tests whatsoever.
Well, but, the danger that we're facing here is a tax revolt. Mm.
Oh, absolutely.
Nobody really wants to talk about this openly, but I'm telling you now that there is a tax revolt already underway.
Yeah.
Look at the stats on who is paying the most tax. There's 224,000 South Africans who pay 35% of personal income tax. Mm. It's 1.3 million taxpayers who pay about 90% of the tax. Wow. That's a huge burden on a few shoulders. We did discuss this the last time. They have options. These people who feel that they've been taxed too much, they do have options, and it's called tax arbitrage. They will move to countries which are like Dubai. You know, you go in there and, you know, Mauritius, they're either tax-free or you're paying a flat 10%. There are countries and there are jurisdictions like this where they will for sure be looking at if this thing is where the thing called the Laffer curve, where you this was discovered by Ronald Reagan back in the day. When you increase taxes and you find out that your revenues decline, that's called the Laffer curve principle. We're past that point. We passed Laffer curve peak at about 2019. So increasing taxes is not going to be a solution. Remember when VAT first came in, I think it was in the 1980s, late 1980s, Baron Duplessis was the finance minister at the time. Sales tax around then was 5%. Wow. And there was a big billboard as you drove into the Joburg CBD, and there's a picture of Baron Duplessis there, and there's a big hole in the middle. And they were trying to sell the public on VAT. There are no holes in VAT, they said. But it went up from 5 to 6%. And I remember I was working at the Sunday Times at that time, and I said, this is going to creep up year by year. And here we are, where we're at a 15% VAT, where they want to bump it up to 16, and it won't stop there. It's just going to keep on going. So something has got to happen to curtail government spending. You know, you cannot really allow governments to be in control of their own spending. You've got to have a body that says no, like National Treasury.
Yeah.
And they've got to be defined in terms of we're the people that will tell you how much you can spend.
Yeah, that's a big problem. It's government sees it as a bottomless pit of ever flowing taxes. I mean, every government is like that, but ours in particular. Imagine if South Africa become a tax haven for the rest of the world. So adopt the Mauritian style and implement it in South Africa by reducing, as you said earlier on, the over 100 different taxes into a handful of taxes, managing it properly, and then encouraging other people to invest in South Africa. Set up the head offices here, exactly what Mauritius is doing, and bring in more money. At the end of the day, you're going to have more people paying taxes, but the overall pot will grow significantly. That should be something that I haven't seen any economist actually put out there as a proper solution. I think our government's just going through what they know best here, and increasing is the easiest thing instead of a complete restructure, when, as you say, a complete restructure is definitely required.
Well, Ireland did a similar thing decades ago there, and they have a body, I think it's called the Industrial Development Agency, the IDA. And they decided we're going to be the tech headquarters for Europe. And they lowered tax rates. And so they got companies like Microsoft and Google to come in there and set up their head offices. There's a downside to that as well, of course, because these, you know, Ireland was a conservative Catholic country, and these companies came in, and one of the arguments is that they pressured for a referendum to remove some of these socially conservative policies that were in place before, like abortion and contraception and so on. Be that as it may, Ireland went through a period of tremendous prosperity. Terribly bad governance there as well, where they just borrowed far beyond their means, and so they ended up with a crisis back in 2008. But it's still, relatively speaking, one of the more prosperous countries in Europe because it became a tax haven.
Yeah, to me it makes perfect sense, but it takes a bit of courage from our government to actually do that, because as you said, there are risks involved. But I think there's far too many other policies that our government will have to consider before bringing taxes down. We're going to take a quick break and be right back after.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
And democracy doesn't just happen. Indeed, you have to get involved, have your say on various policies, and exercise your constitutional right to do that. Get involved in your democracy and shape it for yourselves, which some people just don't seem to be doing correctly. Now, do they, Karina? We've seen some people and some ambassadors of South African ambassadors kind of putting their feet in their mouth, or opening their mouth only twice, and both times was to change feet. Can you believe what happened there?
This was funnily enough, I was invited to attend that online webinar that Rasool, we're talking here about, is it Ibrahim Rasool? Yeah, he used to be the Premier of the Cape. And to be honest, I didn't even know that he was the US ambassador. I wasn't paying any attention. But we certainly know about him now. And I didn't attend that webinar, but then I looked at it later and what he was saying. It is quite astonishing that when you're a guest in another country that you start trashing the president and the government and the movement that brought that president to power as white extremism. And then he goes on to talk about, white victimhood and so on. It's the most tone deaf thing I've ever heard, really, in a long while. There are worse examples, but Ibrahim Rasool apparently is considered an intellectual within the ANC movement. I think what we probably need to start doing is sending more technocratic people who understand trade, who understand diplomacy. We have lined ourselves up here for an absolute wallocking. I think the Trump is not going to take to this kindly, to be talked about in that manner by somebody who's supposed to represent our country. So, what are the consequences here? Maybe you got some ideas on this, but I think AGOA is not going to be that serious. AGOA being the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, which allows us to primarily export our vehicles to the United States. In terms of manufactured exports, by the way, the U.S. is our major market. It's 70% of our manufactured goods that we export go there.
Yeah.
Whereas commodities, is China is bigger. So there's that. That's only going to cut about 0.2% of growth if they decide to take that away. I think far more potentially damaging is if Trump says, our public funds, federal funds, cannot invest in South African bonds anymore. That's it. You're off the investment list. And then you will see a drain. They'll be forced to sell. Our bond market will tank. The rand will tank. And, it'll be a disaster. We're treading on very thin water here. And there's other things they can do. The U.S. could start sanctioning people in South Africa, ANC politicians who've made maybe racist, what they perceive as racist remarks, that they could be targeted for sanctions. And the way the US does this, and I looked at this before when I was investigating the Zimbabwean sanctions that are in place by the US, they're very efficient at doing that. They work out a sort of a Venn diagram. Who's this person? Who are his connections, cousins, and everybody around them? And they monitor that person's financial flows. It's a terrifying thing that they do.
But maybe it needs to be done. I mean, it's a stupid thing to say what he did. And I think he's being supported by the ANC government. in what he has said. He's, as you said, he is an intellectual. Why would he say something like that if he didn't have the backing or approval of other members of the ANC? And if we look at everything else that's happening around Ramaphosa's reaction to the US, to Trump's position on the trades, on the trade stuff and everything else, it seems like they're almost welcoming it, that the ANC doesn't want to deal with the West. They'd rather deal with China and strengthen their positions on that side, which is ridiculous. It is it's like a watching slow suicide. It something has to be done to stop it. Otherwise South Africa will return back to the sanctioned days, with which will be detrimental to everything in South Africa. But you kind of wonder what goes through their heads. Why are they doing this?
Yeah, I think the golden years, South Africa got a free pass for the last 30 years. No matter what the government was doing, they were given a free pass. And some of the obvious injustices that occur in South Africa, and this has been highlighted, in Tucker Carlson's interview with Ernst Rutz from AfriForum. I think he's Solidarity. And other people, it's by the way, there's some very strong South African connections in the Trump administration. David Sachs, is the crypto czar, he was born in Yeovil in Johannesburg, left the country at a young age. He's the guy now steering this Bitcoin reserve in the U.S.
Yeah,
you've got Joel Pollack, who is probably going to be the next ambassador to South Africa. He's been writing at the Breitbart for a number of years. That's a sort of conservative news outlet, very popular in the United States. And he was one time a scriptwriter for Tony Leon of the DA. Peter Thiel, billionaire Peter Thiel and billionaire Elon Musk as well. Believe it or not, Peter Thiel spent time at school in Johannesburg before his parents. He was born in Germany, but then his parents moved to Namibia. He is the one who introduced Donald Trump to J.D. Vance, his vice president. It's not that he has any particular strong views on South Africa, but he did back PayPal and Elon Musk. So you've got this group of South Africans who have Donald Trump's ear. And you can tell from Elon Musk's, what he's sending out on Twitter, that he's not happy with what he sees happening in South Africa. And he's exposing it to the world. Things have changed. I think the golden years are behind us.
No, they definitely have. And I don't know, I still think there's going to be major, major changes coming, with some major, serious surprises coming from Elon Musk especially. I'm convinced Elon Musk is going to be the next U.S. president after Trump.
To
me, he's really started his election campaign, and he's become way, way, way too political, and deeply entrenched in politics. And of course, he's probably the most well-known person in the world at this stage, being head of Twitter, and he's always out there in absolutely everything. Everyone talks about him, and he's immensely popular on both sides. Which I don't know. To me, he's playing politics, and it just smacks of an election campaign as a successor to Trump. But it's a lot of, how does that affect South Africa's future and future growth here? Well, let's find out after the break.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
Hey, welcome back, Kieran. Let's talk about South Africa's growth. How do you see it happening? Can we face another decade of no growth? Will we be facing another decade of no growth? Or will we see some miraculous turnaround?
I wouldn't say it's going to be a miraculous turnaround, but no, I don't see that we're going to face another decade of no growth. We've had a decade of no growth, and we've seen what that's like. And I don't think this is going to be sustainable for very much longer. We're reaching a tipping point, and I think this budget has exposed a lot of the fissures and the wounds that exist in this country and the society at large. I mean, you know, since by the way, going back to Thabo Mbeki's time when Trevor Manuel was the finance minister, we were running a growth of 5 to 6% a year. And a very interesting measure of growth is a stat they call gross fixed capital formation. It's how much is being invested into productive capacity. I'm not talking about stock market. I'm talking about factories and roads and dams and things like that. We're currently at 15%. A developing country, that's of GDP. A developing country should have a fixed investment percentage of GDP at 30%. So we should be double what we're doing. So the government is talking about a 1 trillion rand investment over 3 years in infrastructure. You know, this is like the broken clock thing. We've heard this year after year, and nothing has really transpired there. So government can be an enabler of growth if they do deliver on this infrastructure spending. But it's one of the first things to get culled whenever they're in a corner and they need more money. And how are they going to get into a corner? Well, I'll tell you, 28 million people in this country, nearly half, receive some form of welfare. Now, that's more than doubled over the last decade. Yeah. Meantime, you've got 500,000 new people entering the job market every year. And this is with a youth unemployment rate of 60%. I've been saying this for years. This is unsustainable, and it is a recipe for social upheaval, perhaps of the kind that we saw back in 2021, the riots that happened in KwaZulu-Natal and they spread to Gauteng. Something has got to be done, and it's got to be far more serious. And so what has got to be done? Well, first of all, government's got to cut back. It's got to cut its spending. They've got to go through all the ghost employees, like we've said. They can cut the SETAs and save 80 billion there. There's many different ways that they can do this. They can cut the cabinet in half. But I think more importantly, they've got to put in incentives for business. You look at what happened when they introduced this 125% tax write-off for solar, you know, massive investment in solar panels and alternative energy happened as a result. And that saved Eskom, and it saved the country because you've got this huge amount of private power now being generated.
Yeah. Interesting enough, they stopped that. So they need to reintroduce it along with the other benefits. And I think you hit the nail on the head there, Kieran. Business is where this country is going to survive. Private businesses. Government needs to create a more business-friendly environment by creating tax incentives. I look at countries like, I've got a few friends that live in Luxembourg. Luxembourg did exactly that. Set your business up in Luxembourg. The government helps you create. You pay a lot less tax than any other country in Europe for a number of years. After that period, then you slowly increase to the normal amount. But many incentives for businesses to people to bring businesses into the country and for people to start their own businesses. And you know, it worked there like an extra charm. They should do that here as well.
Yeah, you could, for example, have a tax incentive for every new employee hired. That you can write that off against tax. This would be a very easy thing. But you have a government here that is so totally lacking in imagination. I am generalizing here. There are a few good people in this government, but I think on the financial side, it is so lacking in creativity that they won't want to relinquish any of the sources of funds that they have at the moment. And they're not willing to rethink the whole tax system the way they need to. Lots of incentives for individuals and businesses to stay here, to work here, and to invest in businesses. That would be the way to do it. And throw a few politicians in jail. That would be a great start. You know, we're trying to get off the gray list. What about all these guys that were named in the Zondo reports? Let's show that we're serious about tackling corruption and not excusing it and laughing it off.
Definitely. That'd be a step in the right direction, both for the morale of the country, confidence in foreign investment, and a whole lot of other things. But I think we should chat more about this at some other time, because unfortunately we've run out of time once again. But let's definitely catch up again, Kieran. The listeners will definitely talk about how government can improve it, the incentives that should be done, especially along businesses, and creating an environment or a country, an economy where people want to take part, want to contribute towards a tax, and obviously see something for their money. Kieran, it's been wonderful chatting to you. We'll definitely catch up again.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Kieran. And that brings us to the end of the show. That's Dear Parliament for this week. If you missed any of this show or previous shows, please go to our website, www.chaifm.com, that's chaifm.com, and listen to the podcasts. And until you do that, I shall catch you next time. And remember to stay democratically engaged, active, and responsible. Ciao for now.